Lord, I ask that you talk to all of us tonight. I pray you make my teaching clear enough so that it speaks to all of us concerning our lives as we're looking at the life of Jacob and his family and all that that means. In Jesus' name, amen. I've called this Discovering God's Will because we're all living in lives that we have to go through, and if we're actually followers of Jesus, we have to consider what we are to be doing with our lives in a lot of different ways. And we're always driving in traffic out there. And you have your issues of life, and I have mine, and we all are in this. And we are using Isaac and Jacob as a picture for us to consider our own journey in life and how God wants us to live our lives and what that means in terms of who we are. Jacob is part of the redemption history of the Christian faith, and he is part of that ancestry. He's one of the patriarchs that goes with that redemption. And one of the things that we need to consider also is that we may be the redemption history of somebody in our family, somebody in our workplace, where they come to know who Jesus is and receive him as Savior, and they begin their journey in life in terms of that. And so one of the things we're looking at is how is the things of life do this. And tonight I just kind of want to start with verses 1 to 3. We were finishing up with that 2 weeks ago, and I just want to start there and look at those three verses just for a few minutes. Now Jacob heard that the sons of Laban were saying, Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has gained all this wealth. And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. Now, just in those three verses, there are things that we know about it, that Jacob has been very industrious in terms of doing the things that Laban called him to do in terms of his life, and his wages were being garnered every so often by Laban and all this. But in spite of that, God was blessing him. And when God blesses people, what it did here is it generated bad blood in the family, envy, jealousy in the workplace, you might say, and that's when accusations begin to rise up and they're talking about him. But what we need to remember about this is that God is with Jacob. And if God is with you, you need to hear that. And God blesses him and gives him favor. And that's really an interesting thing, because if you think about it, Jacob is doing the work, but in the midst of the work, God is blessing him, and he's no dummy at this point. He sees what's going on in terms of how this thing is unfolding, and he's noticed that Laban has turned against him, and in reality, he was never for him. He was a hired person, and he pawned his daughters off on him and all that was going. But the family business is going to go to Laban's sons and all that was in there. And we looked at that last time and in terms of that. And there are times that come in our lives to move. There are seasons. And what I want to look at here tonight as we begin this thing is that in those three verses, we notice something. Affliction is coming on Jacob because of the family of Laban around him in his business. Affliction. Now, the thing that I know about affliction is this. Affliction, number one, makes us very uncomfortable. And number two, it is not necessarily bad. Now, affliction doesn't feel good, but affliction isn't necessarily bad. Because what affliction does, it begins to motivate us to do something about the affliction. There are times when we are to do things, and the affliction is the catalyst, you might say, that gets us started in terms of where we're supposed to go. Now, affliction can stampede you if you're not careful. That's why in this particular case, you have a really good example here of affliction that is building up on Jacob in terms of the family business and all that. And it's because God is favoring him. Now, he's industrious, and other people may be very industrious too in terms of the family, but God is favoring him. Affliction makes us uncomfortable. It also makes us willing to take a chance. It also makes us willing to look about changing things. But the second thing about affliction that is really needed, if you're God's man or woman in this world, is this. You have to look for the God-directed direction that you're supposed to go in. That is also needed here. And that's what we're looking at here. Now, remember, we live horizontally in this world and all that, but you got to consider the vertical thinking as well, which is, what is God doing in the midst of all this? Jacob, what is God doing in the midst of all this? Well, what we know is that God is favoring Jacob, and because of that, affliction is occurring to him at this point in time. In verse 3 here, then the Lord said to Jacob, and this is the same kinds of things that we get in terms of God's direction in our lives. The Lord said to him, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. Now, this is the same thing that he was told at the beginning. Do you remember back in Bethel when he went to sleep and he had the dream and God talked to him about, I will be with you, and I will take care of you while you're away, and I will bring you back home. That's what he said at Bethel. Well, he was told that at the beginning. So at this point, he says, he's afflicted, but what do you do? Where do you go? What do you do with your life if you're afflicted? You know, it can drive us to all kinds of things of what we need to do. Well, affliction here is also directed by God. He says, here's what you do, Jacob. And these are the kinds of things God will say to us as well. He says, return to the land of your fathers. Well, you have to kind of think through that. What does that mean? Well, Jacob's been gone 700 miles away from where he grew up, basically, where Isaac is. And he says, go back home. That's where you have your identity as a person. That's where you discovered your purpose in terms of your life and what that means. That's where you got meaning as he was going out from that land. He got the incident at Bethel. And that's, he says, you need to return to where you came from. Where you have identity, where you have purpose, where you have meaning in life. One of the things that when I was down at the church in Kentucky, I was down there 23 years, and let me tell you, the winds of adversity can blow upon you, and the opinions of everybody and their grandmother, everybody's got an opinion, by the way, you know that. If we sit around our campfires, everybody can give you an opinion. Well, because of all the things that I was doing a lot of times, I was working down there, but I came home, and that was here in Decatur. And I would come home to reconnect with my roots, because we would stay at my folks' house, and then I regained my identity and my purpose in life, and then I was able to go back into that world and work, because the opinions of everybody and their grandmother just are always out there, and if you're trying to do God's work, you're going to make some people mad, and you're going to make some people happy, and some people you're the good guy, and some people you're the bad guy, and yet you're just the guy. And so I would come home just to retouch, reconnect. And what is God telling him? He says, go back to your roots. Go home, Jacob. That's the first thing. He says, return to the land of your fathers. And then he says this second thing, to your kindred. What is that? You got to kind of think about this. What is your kindred? Well, those are people that have your way of thinking. It has to do with connecting in terms of how you see the world with the people around you. You need to understand that Jacob was living in a land 700 miles away with his uncle, essentially Laban, and had been working there for 20 years. And at that point in time, he said, you need to return to the place where you think, because these people are not living as God's people. Laban and all his clan were not living as God's people. We don't know how far along Leah and Rachel have come because of Jacob, but we know that that family is not in covenant territory as far as Jacob is concerned. So he says, you go back to your where you grew up, and you go back to that kind of thinking and that understanding of God that you have back there. You go home and you get around people who believe the same kinds of things that you do, Jacob, like Isaac, your father. So in this case, we have a man who is afflicted. And affliction will drive you, but he also is given direction by God as to how he is to move from that affliction. And notice also in this one verse, return to the land of your fathers, that's go home, to your kindred, to the people who think like you do, and I will be with you. And he said that at the beginning. You know, it is a good thing if God says to you, I am with you. You can go through a lot. Now, you still live that out horizontally, but if you know that God says, I'm with you on this, then you got that. That's that vertical look in terms of life as well. So he's getting God-given direction in the midst of his affliction. Now, I know this. We can all look at this at our own workplaces or our places in life and the problems we face and things that we do, and it says affliction is not necessarily bad. It doesn't feel good. But if you're looking for a direction in terms of what that means, sometimes we need that affliction to get us moving in terms of what we are going to do. So that's what's going on here in verses 1 to 3. Jacob is being afflicted because of the workplace, and he is being given direction by God as to what he needs to do. So that's where we are. So verses 4 through 13. And this is the family conference, you might say, or the family meeting. I'm going to read the whole thing, and then we're going to walk through this verse by verse. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah into the field where his flock was, and said to them, I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not permit him to harm me. If he said, the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. And if he said, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. In the mating season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes, and I saw in a dream that the he-goats which leaped upon the flock were striped, spotted, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. That seems to be standard procedure for these patriarchs. When God calls, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes and see, all the goats that leap upon the flock are striped, spotted, and mottled. For I've seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. Now arise, go forth from this land, and return to the land of your birth. Now we're going to stop right there. Now, What is going on here is that there's a family conference that is taking place. Now, he recounts what God has shown him to Leah and Rachel. And he's going through this whole process of this. Now, remember, this could be just horizontal, people living in life. But remember vertical thinking in terms of this, because he's talking to them about what God has done in his life and what he has done. So God leads you in your life, but you work it out here. Now, what he's doing here is, this is for the last 13 years, these two women and all these children and stuff have been part of his family, Jacob's family. And he's talking to them about what God is doing, what has been done to him, and he's going to get everybody up to stream. So verse 5. He said to them, this is Rachel and Leah, "I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before, but the God of my father has been with me." Now, there's a couple things. He's stating to them, hey, there's bad blood going on here. But in the midst of that bad blood from Laban, your father, and the rest of the family, God has been blessing me. You see that in that sentence right there? "But the God of my father has been with me." Now, notice that he says, "the God of my father." You know, this is one of those things that I've noticed in family, that one of the things that we all need to discover at some point in time. I can talk to you about the God that I know in Jesus Christ, and I can give you all kinds of evidence or witness, personal witness and everything, but sooner or later, you're going to have to come to that experience yourself where God becomes your God and not the God of your father or your mother. I have 4 kids. It's one thing to grow up in the midst of the ministry and all that, and maybe I did gave them a good witness and everything, but you know what? I know this, that until they can say, not the God of my dad, but they say it's my God, they haven't got that relationship. And one of the things that we know about Jacob is he's had that initial relationship with God, but notice that he still says, the God of my father, my dad. This is my dad's God. So it hasn't come really home to roost with him totally that this is not the God of his father, but this is the God of Jacob. And the same thing goes for all of us. Notice also that when God was talking to him, he also talks to him, he said, "I'm the God that you met at Bethel. I'm the one." Verse 6, "You know that I have served your father with all my strength." In other words, he's been very industrious. He has not cheated Laban. He has worked diligently for him for 20 years, actually, at this point in time. He's been faithful, loyal, and hardworking. Verse 7, "Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not permit him to harm me." In other words, he also says this, "Laban did me dirty. Your dad did me dirty, Leah, Rachel. But God has protected me in the midst of all that stuff." And you know, I run into people in their job place at times where, you know, they change their wages on you. They change the context of your workplace. They change the context of your job. They move things around on you. And you know what? That's what he's saying. He says, listen, this guy has done me dirty, but God has protected me. Verses 8 and 9. "If he said, the spotted shall be your wages, then all the flock bore spotted. And if he said, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock bore striped. Thus God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me." In other words, he says, God has been involved in this. I'm just working out there And this guy's been doing me dirty the whole time, but God has been with me, and he has worked. And he has made it possible that I get covered in all this. Also, I want you to understand that Jacob is talking to his wives. This is a family conference here. Those two girls are the daughters of Laban. And so he's bringing the family up to steam here. Verses 10 to 12. In the mating season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes, and I saw in a dream that the he-goats, which leaped upon the flock, were striped, spotted, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes and see all the goats that leap upon the flock are striped, spotted, and mottled, for I have been seen all that Laban is doing to you. Jacob tells him, these girls, the dream that he had. Now, this is another place where Jacob is the one who has had the revelations. Not Leah, not Rachel. The only thing that they had revelations really about were the times in which they were barren and bore children. This is a special revelation that was given to Jacob. And in this family conference, he said, he sits down with these girls and he says, listen, I'm going to tell you what has happened over the years. God talked to me in a dream. He talked to me and let me know what was going on. And all I did was follow along and be industrious and do the work and stuff, but God told me what to ask for. Now, this is what you call insider information. The SEC would be after your case if you knew all these things. Because basically, God told him what to do, and then God provided the kinds of progeny that were needed in terms of sheep and goats and all that stuff. That's insider information. If you're dealing with a stock market, it says, God told me to buy this stock this week and sell it 3 weeks from now. And then he told me to do this next. And he said, and you know, hey, God might bless you because he gave you the vision for it. And that's what it is. Now, by the way, that's why Solomon was so rich, because he had insider information. Anyway, that's what he's getting. And he says, I'm here to tell you, this is what God has been showing me over the years. He gave it to me in a dream, and I've just been following through on this. And still part of that conference here. Verse 13. All the Laban is doing to you. He's talked to me. He says, I know how Laban has treated you. I am the God of Bethel. By the way, what he's saying here, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me, now arise, go forth from this land and return to the land of your birth. Notice that he says, I am the God of Bethel. This is where he's saying, Jacob, I'm the guy that you saw when you were laying down and taking that nap in that place, and you named the place Bethel. I am your God. I am yours. And this is the same one. I have been with you the whole time in terms of this. Now notice, he's telling the girls this. And he tells him what he did. You anointed a pillar, and he made a vow to me right there. Now what was that vow? You guys remember the vow? The vow was that, well, it's back a chapter or so. Let's see if we can find it real quickly. This is what he said. This is in chapter 28. This is 20 years ago. It's two chapters. It's kind of like reading a tombstone. He saw the vision of the angels going up and down from heaven, and the Lord stood above it, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your descendants, and your descendants shall be like the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and by you and your descendants shall all the families of earth bless themselves. This is in chapter 28, by the way. Behold, I am with you. God, you know, if God tells you, I am with you, That's one of those focal points that you can grab onto in the midst of affliction. By the way, Jacob was running from affliction because his brother was out to kill him. When God said this, I will be with you, where did I leave off here, and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken to you. And he's repeating what he says. Anyway, that God had told him this. He says, I'm the God of Bethel. Now, you remember where you set up that testimony? And you made a vow to me. And what was Jacob's vow? He says, if. God, I love it. Jacob is so much like us. God, if you'll do this for me, I'll be your man. It's that conditional if. Some of us walk by faith, don't we, in terms of this? But then we always have that clause that's down there at the bottom of the paper in small print. If you do this for me, I will be your man. But if you don't do it for me, well, we'll be talking. And really, and that's what he's talking about. He says, okay, you made that vow, although your vow, it was very conditional. God's vow to him was not conditional. So keep that in mind as well. And so God is giving him direction now. He says, I want you to go back to the land of your birth. Now, he's bringing the girls along in terms of this. Okay? And that's what's going on. He has done this family conference. He has given them revelation that they probably only sort of knew, if anything. They knew he was a man of God, and they knew that God was with him, maybe, and they know these things, but they don't have any particular revelation that we know of. Now, we don't know what they did around the meals, but they had 11, six, first grade and down, sitting around the table, so I don't know if there's a lot of intelligent conversation that goes on at a table full of kids. Anyway, but he's bringing the girls along in this, and he's bringing them into consensus. Okay, verses 14 to 16. Then Rachel and Leah answered him, is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and he has been using up the money given for us. All the property which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. Do. Think about this in a horizontal, and they've been living their lives together for 13 years. We know that. They have 12 kids in those last 7 years, you might say, okay, between them and the two maidservants. And what are they saying here? They're saying a few things. They agree to what Jacob has brought up to them, and they're going to submit to his leadership. Now, pay attention. There's the horizontal of living of life. We all do it. But the vertical thinking is, what is God in doing involved in this time period in their lives, and what is God doing in your life in this time period that he's doing? And pay attention to what is being said here. Verse 14, there's several things that go on here. Let me find that. 14. What chapter are we on? 31. Yeah. Okay. Verse 14. It says this. It says, then Rachel and Leah answered, is there any portion of inheritance left to us in our father's house? Basically, they say, Dad has disowned us. You know, I know people whose parents have disowned them in life. I don't know if I have any sitting here, but there are people who have been disowned by their parents, abandoned, rejected, whatever. And these girls are voicing that kind of opinion at this point. You know, my folks really have cut me off. Verse 15. Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and he has been using up the money given for us. Basically, he said, he has treated us as strangers. We're not even blood kin to him anymore. As far as he concerned, we have been forsaken. We have been abandoned by our father. And essentially, he sold us into our relationship with you, Jacob. We were forced to do it. Now, you got to think about this, too. You know, when Leah went in to be with Jacob when he was probably three sheets to the wind and tricked him into being her husband, how much did Laban put his thumb down on that and push her into it? I would say that she didn't really have a great deal of choice in that. Now, she may have actually said, this is okay with me, too. But we don't know that, but we know that he is not a good guy. And he has abandoned those two girls to Jacob and basically treated them as not family anymore. Number six, verse 16. All the property which God has taken away from our father belongs to us. In other words, they're talking about all these spotted and striped of creatures we have. You know you're blessed. You know that. And then that's what's going on here. They're getting rid of all those flocks that have come to Jacob because of God's action in those things. That's what's going on here. And they said, all that stuff belongs to us now. And to our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. Now, in the midst of this family discussion, now, first off, family discussions are pretty good things to have. But we know this, that in marriage, and Jesus says it, and it says in the Bible, you know, a man leaves his father and mother and cleaves unto his wife and two become one flesh. And that's out of Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, that comes into play here. Remember to think horizontally in terms of just living life, because that could be this story, just living life, but think vertically as well. These two girls may be at odds. We have watched them. Envy and jealousy they have fought over Jacob's affection and love for 13 years. So they have been at odds with one another over that stuff. But what have they done here? One of the things is they have united against the common enemy. The other thing that may have happened in these 13 years, we know about their envy and jealousy, all the humanity that's involved in this, the horizontal stuff, but they have also learned to live together. This isn't what you call a perfect household. There's been a lot of strife in the midst of all this. But in the midst of that 13 years, how much is God working in bringing these people together as a family in terms of this? That's the vertical part of this as well. It's not just two sisters who fight against each other all the time. They have been working together as well. Even though they're dealing with their own humanity, the envy, the jealousy, and all that goes with it, And now Jacob is also revealing more things to them in terms of their lives. And they understand the affliction that is coming upon their husband, because that affliction is also coming upon them and the family. And God has given Jacob the direction, and they submit to that direction, and they begin to move it. God has said that to you, let's do it. You ought to read this stuff with the intent of saying, well, what can I take this in terms of discovering God's will for my own life? Jacob is being driven and afflicted to get back to the beginning of where he came from in terms of his identity and purpose and meaning, and he is being called to get back into covenant territory with in terms of his life. And that is, he's 700 miles away from covenant territory, because that's where he found God. And where he found God is where God is saying, you need to come back home to that place in terms of your life right now. Now, there's a physical picture of spiritual reality here, because I experience this a lot in terms of people who attend a great banquet, which is, they go to it and they say, oh, I've been away from God's territory in terms of my life. They've been off road for years, you might say, and suddenly they figure it out. I need to get back into his presence and the territory where God is. And they begin to move in terms of that. And they begin to find their identity and purpose in God. And they come back to God's covenant territory for their life. And everybody here, if you think about it, I hope everybody here, if there is a place where you met God, and sometimes we just got to go home to that place in order to get in touch with it again and again, because, well, we get out there outside God's territory and we begin to act differently, and we are, you know, we end up with lots of people of the world, you might say. But sometimes we need to get back to our Father's house. We need to get back to that place where we knew where God was, and he gave us our identity and purpose and our meaning in terms of life. And the second thing is that we have to begin to get around people who think in terms of those kinds of things and not be outside God's covenant territory. And that's what the revelation is here. And these girls, they say, they don't know that territory. They've never been home with Jacob. They've never gone back to Grandpa's house, because Esau's back there. And Jacob, I'm not going home, because that boy was trying to kill me. My brother was trying to kill me. So they never got back there. So there was no Christmas or Easter or family vacations back to where Jacob grew up. So they don't know anything about this place. Jacob's the one with the revelation. And Jacob knows where God is and where he found him and where he's going to find himself again. So this is going on, and they have the family discussion, okay? And I'm doing really good here. We're going to move on here. We're going to go on to the where they make the break for the jailbreak. Verse 17 through 23. So Jacob arose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he drove away all his cattle, all his livestock, which he had gained, the cattle in his possession, which he had acquired in Paddan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole her father's household gods. And Jacob outwitted Laban the Aramean, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. He fled with all that he had, and he rose and crossed the Euphrates and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him for 7 days and followed close after him into the hill country of Gilead. But God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream by night and said to him, take heed that you say not a word to Jacob, either good or bad. Now, basically these verses is verses 17 to 23. This is a jailbreak, if you want to call anything. They're escaping from their bondage to Laban in terms of that. And they're going to Gilead, which is essentially the Golan Heights in Israel area right now. So what they're doing, and this is just, if you just figure, they're going to travel 200 miles in 11 days. And they aren't going by SUVs or anything else. So they're moving about 20 miles a day with all that they had. But these are booking it. And I remember the old Rawhide program where Clint Eastwood, Rowdy Yates and all them, they drove those cattle, and that was always about Rawhide. They get them up and get them moving. Well, this is what's going on here. They are heading out, buddy, and they are booking it with all that they had. Now, they're moving along. This is Israeli cowboys. And they're booking it. Now, Laban is not driving cattle, so it only takes him 7 days to catch up after 3 or 4 days, starting later. And so that's what's going on here in the midst of all that. And there's one thing I said that we're going to come back to this. Rachel stole his father's household gods. There's something about Rachel that we need to take a look at here in terms of that. But I'm going to come back to her in a bit. Verse 24 is that, but God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream by night and said to him, take heed that you not say not a word to Jacob, either good or bad. What I want you to see here in this, and we need to take this to heart in terms of our own lives. If you've been to the great banquet, then you know that there's a whole lot more going on than meets the eye. And God is involved in behind the scenes in terms of your life, my life, and you'll notice that God is in Jacob's life. What is he doing in verse 24? God intervenes and intercedes for Jacob in a dream to Laban. Jacob doesn't even know that anything's going on. Jacob doesn't know what God is doing at all. Which brings me to the thing, it is wisdom and knowledge. In Proverbs chapter 1, it says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And in chapter 9, I think it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, knowledge and wisdom. It is a healthy respect for who you're dealing with. And we know this about Jacob. Jacob is God's man. And he gets a lot of bad press from a lot of theologians and preachers, but he is God's man, and he's really dealt with Laban straight up for the 20 years that he's been there. Ever since Bethel, after he cheated his brother with his mother's help, that's one thing. But after Bethel, I don't see where he cheated Laban at all. He was straight up, he worked for him, and he made him a lot of money and everything, and he did really good for him, but he is God's man because he is the pathway of redemption for us. And so God appears to Laban in a dream, and he says, hey, pay attention. You leave my boy alone, or I'm going to deal with you. Now, I don't know about you, but if God appeared to me in a dream and said, you better not be messing with this guy, I think I would say, yes, Lord. A healthy respect for who you're dealing with here. That's what I see here. And Jacob has no clue. None whatsoever that God is doing anything on his behalf. Outside of the fact that he told him to get up and move and go home. So I want you to, we know this. If you're God's man or woman in this world, and you're doing God's work, and you're moving along the path that he wants in terms of his will for your life, and you're maybe trying to discover it, and you're living very horizontally out there, and but you're thinking vertically on occasion about what's going on with your life. Here's what I want you to know. He said, I will be your shield and defender. And one of the things that I've figured out about that is, someplace along the line, I may believe in God, but do I believe him when he says to me, I will be your shield and defender? Now, a couple of things about there. Look at Psalm 27. Now, I don't have this. No, I do have it printed. Okay. Psalm 27 is one of those psalms that ought to speak to us about life. Come on, where are you, Psalms? Psalm 27, and I'm just going to kind of walk through you this with you because this is where we need to be tonight. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Now, this is attributed to David, and he's a man who had dealt with affliction a lot during his life, so he knows what he's talking about. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me, uttering slanders against me, my adversaries and foes, they shall stumble and fall. Though a host encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war rise against me, yet I will be confident. One thing I have asked of the Lord, and that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For he will hide me in his shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will set me high upon a rock. Now, this particular psalm, if you think about those five verses, what is he saying? God is my shield. Just really? Isn't it? He is saying, God is my shield. He's the one, he's kind of like the force between me and my enemies. He's out there and he's taking care of stuff in terms of that. I am your shield. Turn to Psalm 20, verses 1 to 9. The Lord answer you in the day of trouble. Name of the God of Jacob to protect you. May he send you help from the sanctuary and give you support from Zion. One thing I know that happens is this. In the day of trouble, the name of the God of Jacob protect you. May he send you help from the sanctuary. I know this. You know, I preach most every Sunday, and I get up here, and you know, I know this truth. That sometimes those of you who are sitting out there get help from the sanctuary just because of what I said. And I didn't call your name. I know that that works that way. So when he said help from the sanctuary and give you support from Zion, I think about what I do on a Sunday by Sunday basis. You know, and there are some times when you're looking for help in the sanctuary. You may not even know it was scriptural, but it is. May he remember all your offerings and regard with favor your burnt sacrifices. And that is those things that you have done in terms of your life, in terms of giving yourself to God, in terms of your stewardship of life towards God and the things that are of God, and may he remember all your offerings. This is not monetary offerings so much as it's the offerings of your life. When you have been in service to God and you've done the work for him, and regard with favor your burnt sacrifices, those are the things where, well, it's more than just doing the work. It's actually when you are being, it's tough to get it done because you're actually sacrificing yourself in many ways. That it's as simple as, you know, serving on a great banquet team or teaching Sunday school for kids or whatever. It could be helping some guy on the street that needs some help at some point in time. It could be going to prison and serving on a great banquet team down there. Your offerings and your burnt sacrifices. May grant you your heart's desire and fulfill all your plans. May we shout for joy over your victory in the name of our God. Set up our banners. May the Lord fulfill all your petitions. Now, this goes on. God said, I am your shield and defender. Now, it's one thing for him to be my shield. But it is another thing when you talk about him as your defender. I have seen God do some mighty powerful things in people's lives. Circumstances and situations where God has been their shield. He has protected them from serious harm in all kinds of different ways. It could be financial, it could be physical, it could be spiritual, it could be emotional, it could be intellectual, but where he has literally been that bubble that has protected people. I have also seen him defend. And that's where you need a healthy respect for who you're dealing with. Because if he is somebody's defender and you decide to go against him, guess what? God has told that person, I will be your defender. And when he's your defender, it's a big deal because this is the part that scares me. When he says, I am his defender. Well, I'm not going to mess with somebody who's out there doing God's work if God is really with them, that he is not only going to shield them from any malice or hurtfulness that comes his way and protect them, but he is also going to say, all right, Laban, you better not mess with my boy or I'm going to kick your butt. That's what's going on here. I got 5 minutes. We're going to keep moving here. Now, we know this, that God's will for Jacob is his life. Would you say, 20 years after he ran from Esau, you think about this. So think about your own life at this point, too. Has Jacob's life been hard? Bad? Or has he been blessed? Life is kind of a trade-off. If I'm Jacob, he's had to work his tail off. He has had people against him. He has been treated poorly in the workplace, you might say. He was tricked into marrying two women. Then he ended up with four women and 12 kids. And all that goes with it, and the hardships of life. And there, you know, you sit around the table, and you got 12 kids that are, none of them are in first grade yet. And he's got two wives that are dealing in jealousy and envy and all that goes with that in terms of his life. And says, well, does he have a bad life? Or is he blessed? You know, how do you look at this life here? You know, I know more now than I did 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, I probably knew more than I did 40 years ago in terms of life. His life is hard, but it was blessed. was it not? And what has happened with him is that he is discovering God's will in terms of what God is revealing to him as he goes in this life. He is the person for the redemption of humanity and history, just as you may be the redemption person for people in your history or in your future. But is he blessed in that hardship or that all he had to deal with? You know, comfortable life is not necessarily a good life. And an afflicted life like he has had in terms of all that he's had to do is not really a bad life. We discover God's will for our life as we go. And as he went, he was getting answers in terms of his life. And here's the other part of that. If we won't go, we won't know. And that's the way it works. These verses here in Genesis chapter 31 or 32, I can't ever keep them straight. Verse 25 through 32, I read them to you, or I haven't read them to you. Verse 25, and Laban overtook Jacob. Now, remember, Laban has had this dream, okay? You got to keep that in mind. God basically opened the door. How many of you have seen that Back to the Future number 2 where they went into the future? Or he went, it's the first one. And Back to the Future, and he, Michael J. Fox dresses up like Darth Vader in his dad's room, and says, "Arr!" And he says, "You go out with this girl or not?" And scares the living fire out of him. I think that's the way Laban was probably at that point in time, but he was chasing after him. Laban overtook Jacob. Now, Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen encamped in the hill country of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have cheated me and carried away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and cheat me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with mirth and songs?" Oh, I love Laban. "With tambourine and lyre. And why did you not permit me to kiss my sons and my daughters farewell? Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Take heed that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' Now you have gone away because you long greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" Now that's the spot. And Jacob answered Laban, "Because I was afraid." Remember, he was afraid, but God had told him he was with him. But he did not have the revelation that Laban had, which was, if you mess with my boy, I'm going to take you to the woodshed. He didn't have that revelation. We're going to stop right here at these verses, and 2 weeks from tonight, next week is a time of prayer and worship here. 2 weeks from tonight will be the last one in 2018 because Christmas is coming. And we all know about that. And we will pick up again on January 9th. But 2 weeks from tonight, we'll pick up where Laban is right here in terms of verses 25 to 32. And as I said right up there, the way you see the world is the way you are. Just keep that in mind. The way that Laban talks to him is not the way the world is. It's the way Laban is. And we'll talk about that when we come back in 2 weeks from tonight. Let's pray. Lord, I ask that you, in this story, that you would give us all insight into our own lives and also begin to discover your will for us in terms of this life. And I ask that you would take this and enhance it by your Spirit for each of us in terms of our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.